Thank you very much, Rabbi Eisenberg. Thank you to everybody. It's an honor to come and speak here. Actually, the first time, right after I got married, one of the first things we did in Chicago, we came and we heard your presentation here in this room.
Oh, okay, wow. It was 4 years ago.
What? It was 4 years ago. So Rabbi Eisenberg invited me to speak at the Foundation Series, the Foundations of Religious Zionism, and I suggested talking about the Rabbanut HaRashit, the Chief Rabbinate of Israel, and Rabbi Eisenberg made a funny face. That's a foundation of religious Zionism. And in my work, both before coming here with rabbis and the Rabbanut, and especially coming here, I've come to appreciate a little bit more about the importance of the Rabbanut and how much it really is a foundation in the creation of the religious state, the new Jewish state in the land of Israel. It continues to be a foundation, and a foundation that bears a lot of the weight of the challenges, the contemporary pressing challenges of today for religious Zionism and for Israel. It embodies a lot of those challenges. It has to deal with a lot of those challenges. And it's really, it's an amazing enterprise to explore. A little bit of historical context. First of all, we know that Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, that Torah emanates naturally from the land of Israel, that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara in Yoma says, the Sanhedrin was the base for Torah, for judgment, for law, for leadership. And that had to be on Har HaBayis. For those of you who were here a few years ago, Rav Schechter spoke in Yeshurun. He expounded upon this very well. And had I spoken last week during the freeze, it would have been relevant to the Parsha. But it no longer is. And then afterwards, we know that we have a mitzvah to make a Batei Din and to have rabbinic leadership in every area. And the Gemara talks about whether you need Batei Din in every region, in every city. But we need to have rabbinic leadership. And rabbinic leadership and organized rabbinic leadership has been a hallmark of Jewish communal organization throughout the ages. Interestingly, as an aside, but it'll be important later, starting in the 11th century, a lot of the rabbinic leadership was actually organized and respected by the secular governments as a way of keeping the Jewish community organized and for raising taxes. Rav Kook, who was the first chief rabbi, spoke at the establishment of the chief rabbinate in 1921, and he said that the return of collective rabbinic leadership in Israel has the echo of the prophecy of Va'ashiva Shoftach Kibrishana V'yotzach Kivatchila, the prophetic promise of returning leadership and judgment to the state of Israel. And there is a certain sense that the Rabbanut, of course, we don't have smicha the same way that they had in the Sanhedrin. And we don't have the Beis HaMikdash to imbue the Kedusha to the Sanhedrin in on Har HaBayis. However, there is a certain sense of that. What is the Rabbanut? The Rabbanut is the body in Israel that makes the decisions and has jurisdiction on all types of Jewish life, including marriage, divorce, burial, conversion, kosher certification, what the kosher laws are, Jewish immigration, mikvos, yeshivas, and rabbinical courts, not to mention giving smicha. It's the government body that makes the decisions in terms of all of these areas. That last one, the rabbinical courts, is a very large enterprise, which is managed by the Ministry of Religious Affairs. And together with the Ministry of Religious Affairs and the Minister of Religions, it administers all these religious services. And there's, of course, many different branches of the Israeli government that work together on these areas. It's very, very convoluted in terms of which office in the state of Israel is actually managing any one part, but the decision-making is certainly kept to the Rabbanut. It's important to note that the Rabbanut is not what we in America call the rabbinate, right? The Rabbanut is not focused on individual people, individual families, or even individual communities. It's not focused on the pastoral care. It's really a government body which is looking at regulations and administering services and maintaining standards. Structurally, there's a moetzet of 12 people. It's very regimented. There are two chief rabbis who each serve 10-year terms. Some of the chief rabbis over the course of history, some of the towering figures of the rabbinate in general in Israel, The chief rabbi is not like many non-Jews who I speak to. He's not the Pope. He's not the Posek Achron. We don't have pictures of him on our wall. But the chief rabbi presides over the rabbinical courts and presides over all of these other areas. Rav Lau was actually in New York for a conference that we co-sponsored a few weeks ago, and he came in on a Tuesday, I believe. He left on a Tuesday night and left on a Monday because he presides over the Beit Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, and he can't miss any of the proceedings of the Beit Din HaGadol. So as the head of the Beit Din HaGadol, he could come in for our meetings just during those days, and then he had to get back. Historically, the chief rabbinate dates back to the Ottoman period, where there was a Rishon LeZion. It wasn't called the chief rabbinate. Under the British mandate, the High Commissioner established the Orthodox rabbinate in 1921, continuing the tradition from the Ottomans. And of course, Rav Kook became the chief Ashkenazi rabbi, and Rav Yaakov Meir became the chief Sephardi rabbi. And from the very beginning, from 1921, there were divergent views about what the role of the chief rabbinate should be. Rav Kook had a very expansive view that the rabbinate should influence all areas of society, from security to agriculture, to every part of Jewish life. Of course, the secular element thought that they should have a very restricted and limited role. The Eda Haredit broke off from the very beginning and said, you're not my rabbi, right? Ben-Gurion, really, when he struck this deal with Agudas Yisrael to create the chief rabbinate, it was for political reasons. It was straight up for political reasons. He needed the organization. And again, this echoes back to what the chief rabbinate was in many areas of medieval Europe. 1947, David Ben-Gurion establishes that the chief rabbinate is going to have these roles and responsibilities as the state is created under the status quo agreement, a letter that he issued. And he worked this out with the Agudas Yisrael. 1953, the rabbinical courts are formed. 1980, there was a revised law of how the chief rabbi does work. I printed it out. It's incredibly complicated. Every time they pick a new chief rabbi, if you try to figure out how they go about assembling the 150 people who make up the body that elects the new chief rabbi, it's very, very convoluted and very complicated. They try to get a cross-section of Israeli society, or at least the ones with in the Dati sense, but not exclusively the Dati. They try to get from Sephardim and Ashkenazim, local and national figures, but it's very, very complex. The role of the rabbinate extends beyond those individual services that I mentioned, and it really has a much larger meta role in the state of Israel. Aaron Lichtenstein wrote that regarding the rabbinate, that if the institution didn't exist, it would have to be invented. It was almost, it's a natural necessity for the Jewish state to have a body called the rabbinate. And in that sense, as a foundation of religious Zionism, it's not something that existed and then became a foundation. It's the religion in religious Zionism. First of all, within those specific roles and responsibilities, we have to not forget, in terms of kashrus, the rabbinut is the largest kashrus administrator in the world, dealing with the largest population of Jewish people eating kosher food in the world. It protects yichus, and through overseeing marriage and divorce, it ensures that our children and grandchildren can marry the children and grandchildren of other people in the state of Israel, which we know in America is becoming increasingly hard, something which we deal with at the CRC all the time. And in terms of its potential to reach people and inspire people and connect people to Judaism, it has unparalleled opportunities. Rav Kook, when he started, wrote that HaRabanut Einena Nachala Chelek Echad Bilvad Shel HaYishuv Hitzricha Liyot Me'al Kol HaMiflagot VaKochot SheBiYishuv VaHashpata Chayevet Liyot Al Kol Tchumei HaChayim. Again, an expansive view, but not just expansive in terms of the areas of life that the rabbinate should touch, But in terms of which sect of Israeli society, Rav Kook saw that the Rabbanut should be the rabbi, quote unquote, for the entire society, which is very important. Rav Herzog wrote, Chovateinu b'tur rabbanim la'ached et kol Yisrael l'chativa achat. It's our responsibility as the Rabbanut to unite the Jewish people. Part of the responsibility of the Rabbanut is to unite the Jewish people. V'anu ma'aminim, writes Rav Herzog, she'ichud ze yavo kasher na'amod kulanu al yisod Torat Elokim haktuba v'hamsura. It's not just uniting people. It's not through Eurovision. It's not through the Olympics. It's uniting people through religion, through Torah, and through the tradition that has been passed on through the generations. And this was one of the, and is, one of the meta goals of the Rabbanut, is to unite the Jewish people in Israel. The Karn Rav Arashir of Lao quotes the Gemara in Brachos, that Hashem says, Atem asituni chativa achad ba'olam. He said, God says to the Jewish people, you say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, you unify my name in this world, and I will unite you in the world. That as a result of us being unifying God's name in this world, God unifies us. That through our work in sanctifying God's name, we merit unification and we become unified. And this is a major goal of the Rabbanut sees in terms of its work, is to unify the Jewish people. Not just to unify the different groups, the religious and the non-religious, but even within the religious camp. It's about unity within the religious camp. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, also he says, Rav Tuv Tzafun B'Sidur Zeh. He says there's a lot of good that comes out of this organization called the Rabbanut. B'Yichud Klapei Pnim, in terms of the organization within the religious world. He says, without the Rabbanut, it would just be the wild, wild Mideast, right? And everybody would be doing their own thing and there would be no standards and you wouldn't know what to expect and who to trust. And sometimes, unfortunately, with kashrus, we still have that and with other things. But one of the stated goals of the Rabbanut, and something that it does work towards, is that sense of unity. Rav Shaul Yisraeli made the point that because the Rabbanut is from a democratically elected government and from the majority of the religious people in Israel put their trust in the Rabbanut, Yesh lo b'chol makom sheberetz Yisrael tokev shel Marad HaAsra. The Rabbanut has the status of the Marad HaAsra in the land of Israel because it has that position. The Gemara in Yevamos talks about the Isser of Losis Godudu, Shelo Yasu Agudos Agudos, that you're not allowed to have multiple Batei Din in any one city. You're not allowed to have, you're not allowed to split up into different groups. And there is a sense that everyone has to work together and you're not allowed to have little different splinter groups working on their own. That there's a responsibility to have one unified body of rabbinic leadership. Interestingly, the Rivash quotes a Maharsha, and again, going back to, again, that notion in the Middle Ages of the rabbinic, the rabbinate being a function of the secular government, the Rivash says that every secular government has in its power the ability to appoint judges for the Jewish community, and we have to listen to what they say from the power of Dina de Malchuta Dina, that the government has a right to appoint rabbis. Umisha, and anybody who doesn't listen to them, who mitzaras atzibor, ba'asit leisin liten etzadin. You'll be punished severely if you don't follow the rabbinic leadership that the non-Jewish government established for you. There's a sense that there's a notion of a rabbinate with power, and that it's not just power which is imposed upon us, but it helps create unity in the community and organization. One of the other meta goals is to give a Jewish nature and a Jewish sensibility, Jewish sensitivity, and Jewish values to everything that the state does. there are many occasions when the state and the leaders of the state call upon the chief rabbis for their guidance in terms of how to decide certain issues. Certain issues which may not necessarily have had to go to the chief rabbinate, but did. How to treat the falasha that we're making aliyah. Rav Avad Yosef wrote a famous tshuva. The government could have gone around it in different ways. But there's a sense that the rabbinate represents for the secular state, it represents religion, it represents tradition and rabbinic leadership. Rabbi Zerach Warhaftig wrote an article about the Rabbanut, and he says that he heard a story from Rav Unterman. When Rav Unterman was a Rav Rashi, he said that when he was a rabbi in a small town in Russia, and a shochet came to him and said, "Can you tell me if this piece of meat that I shechted, is it kosher?" And Rav Unterman looked at the piece of meat and said, "No, it's not kosher." And the shochet took out his blade and said, "Rabbi, maybe you want to reconsider." And Rav Unterman said, "No." He said, "No, I'm standing by my ground, and the piece of meat is not kosher." And the shochet was incensed. But then Rav Unterman said, "And you know what I'm going to do? I don't want you to lose too much money, and I know this is a problem in general for shochtim." He got all the shochtim in the town together, and he made an agreement amongst all the shochtim. He made an arrangement that they shouldn't lose too much, anyone individually, if something happened to the meat. And he made sure that the shochtim would be taken care of. And this is another important aspect to the Rabbanut, which the story brings out, of being independent of others, and yet independent of other considerations, and making decisions clearly upon halacha and clearly upon masara. But that being said, trying to the best of their abilities to help societally and to help individuals and to help make arrangements that work in the best interest. Rabbi Ries pointed out, Rabbi Ries, who's our Av Beit Din, has extensive conversations with the Rabbanut and very, very warm relationship with the Rabbanut and the Rav Rashi. Rabbi Ries just put out his Sefer Kanfeyona, and he has Haskamas in the beginning of the Sefer from the Sephardi and Ashkenazi chief rabbis. Rabbi Ries points out that when it comes to the relationship in terms of the independence of the Rabbanut, ironically, there are certain powers that the Rabbanut in Israel has that Batei Din can't even imagine, like jailing people who don't give their wives a get, in terms of enforcing judgments. And on the other hand, because they're a state government, they're subject to all types of state laws. And there was a Supreme Court decision in 2006, the Batei Din in Israel can't make monetary adjudications. Anything that here in America, any two parties with separation of church and state, any two parties can sign a binding arbitration agreement, go to any three people and have monetary issues settled. Any small bezdin can do that. In Israel, that can't be done. There are certain powers that the Rabbanut and the Batei Din have because of their relationship with the state, and there's certain restrictions that they have. And of course, everything that the Rabbanut does, or everything that the Rabbanut decides, as a matter of policy, they don't just do amongst themselves. Because they're part of the government, everything is subject to the approval of the Supreme Court. A few months ago, I was present at a meeting with certain representatives of the Kashrus division of the Rabbanut, who were meeting with the heads of some of the major Kashrus organizations in America. And some of the standards of the Rabbanut in Israel are not up to the standards that we've come to accept in America. And the representatives of the Rabbanut were saying, any move they do, any position they take is going to be challenged in court and be dragged out for years. And they have to move very, very carefully. That being said, they are moving. They're moving, but it's going very slowly. We do, there's also another notion of the Rabbanut, which is one that we don't embrace as much. There are those within the Rabbanut who see the Rabbanut as being the world body for rabbinic leadership and having a voice globally. Thank God here, especially here in Chicago, we have a very strong rabbinate, very strong Bezdin and rabbinic leadership. And that's sometimes a little bit of an undertone in the conversation between the American rabbinate and American Batei Din and the Israeli rabbinate. That being said, we enjoy a very warm relationship with the rabbinate. I mentioned to you a few months ago at this point, we had a conference in New York that we co-sponsored, and Rav Lau came in, and there's a lot of cooperation that goes on between the CRC, between the American community, and the rabbinate. Increasingly, we have increasing respect for their work. They're increasing their standards, their organization, and we're increasingly dependent on a relationship with them. In today's day and age, you know, divorces, conversion, everything has to be done in conjunction with the other body, make sure that we're always on the same page and that everything will be accepted in both ways. Rabbi Reese is the head of the National GPS Committee, the network of conversion courts here in America, which is affiliated with the RCA. And of course, that was done very carefully in conjunction with the Rabbanut, and it created a portal for having conversions done in America that will be de facto approved by the Rabbanut, which was a very, very important development. Of course, the increasing standards here in America that we've come to enjoy, especially like in Kashrus, in Israel have their other challenges, because one of the tensions in the Rabbanut is how high do you set the bar for our halachic standards if on the other end they're going to be a price to pay communally. This is, of course, when it comes to conversion, Rav Uziel had a much more lenient approach towards conversion, and now there are increasingly strong, increasingly more stringent standards. But the Rabbanut, despite all the good that I've been mentioning, as we all know, the Rabbanut doesn't always enjoy the type of accolades that we might want to confer upon it. We've all been reading about the great schisms that are opening up amongst the Jewish people between the diaspora and Israel, religious and non-religious within the various streams. In Israel, the estimates seem to be that maybe 5% of the Israeli population is conservative reform. So in terms of those streams in Israel, it's very, very small. But I saw a report from, I think, 2015. But no, sorry, this is a more recent report. It only came out a few weeks ago, that a third of marriages now are being done outside of the Rabbanut. Some of those are being done through Haredi places. Some of them are being done without a Beis Din, without official recognition. And some are civil unions. In 2010, the Israeli government approved civil unions, not marriages, but civil unions. And for marriages, many people, as anybody who's been to Israel knows, they go off to Cyprus, or they go somewhere else outside of Israel and get married. But it's not going to be recognized by the Rabbanut as a marriage. In 2014, the Israel Democracy Institute published an index of the trust that the Israeli public has in various public institutions. And the Rabbanut scored a 29.5% trust rating, which was lowest only to the media. That hurts. There are ongoing efforts to abolish the Rabbanut. There's an online petition now which is being promoted, just to get rid of the Rabbanut completely, to get rid of the whole thing. And of course, with American Jewry, there's been a lot of tension, whether it comes to conversion status issues of who is a Jew. Rabbanut looks and says, in America, you have different considerations. Non-Orthodox in America is not the same as a Sephardi non-Dati in Israel. The different sensitivities and sensibilities. And again, part of this goes back to what are the expectations of the rabbinate, of a rabbi, of rabbinic leadership. Is it more pastoral? Is it more about inspiration? Or is it really maintaining standards? And if we keep in mind the frame of reference for the rabbinate is maintaining standards, because that's how the Rabbanut sees its responsibility. In that respect, they actually are doing an admirable job. But they're the lightning rod. There's a sense that they're intransient, that they're bureaucratic. They're a government office. They're part of the government. They are a bureaucratic arm of a bureaucratic government, which is not okay, but it is. Some say it's too orthodox. Some say it's not orthodox enough. And they're in that middle ground, which is very hard to hold. And they've been holding it, though, now for almost 100 years. Increasingly, they've had to deal with very tough challenges from the Russian immigration and how to deal with the conversion in that respect. The growth of not just the Haredi population, but the growth in the voice of the Haredi parties politically, the greater intermingling between America, with Israelis increasingly coming to America, more Americans coming to Israel, and those sensitivities mingling. Rabbanut embodies the challenge of religious Zionism. And aside from the religious Zionism, the tension that we're all seeing now with the basic law debate in terms of being a Jewish democratic state, how do you balance the Jewish and the democratic? A lot of that tension is weighing down on the Rabbanut and how they're going to navigate these issues. And again, there's a lot of good in the Rabbanut, and there's a lot that needs to be improved. And the part that needs to be improved needs to be improved. On the one hand, it's a centralized system. It's a very organized system. Everything is very organized. But it's so centralized and so organized, it's slow to change, and it's very hard to create any wiggle room. Customer service and sensitivity is not the highest order of concern. Similar complaints to police departments here, or the DMV, or the military. They're trying to uphold certain rules and regulations, certain standards they're trying to protect, and sometimes that comes at the cost of the sensitivity. Transparency is not simple. My wife has an aunt who's been an aguna now for 15 years, and in my wife's family, the horror stories of how they were treated by the Rabbanut, it's part of everyday conversation. But when you see it as a government office, okay, government offices, they lose files, they misplace things. Yeah, they'll push off a meeting until the next session. And that makes sense as a government body, but for the individual people, it's very painful. And then, of course, there's that pernicious creep of tribalism, of politics, and all hakina v'hataiva v'hakovod. It creeps in, and this is actually an age-old problem in the rabbinate. Rabbis and judges who are appointed because of outside reasons, there's a gemara in Bikurim that refers to the pasuk in Shmos, lo ta'asuni ti elokei kesev elokei zahav lo ta'asu lechem. Gods of silver and gold are the rabbis who are appointed because of this. And a lot of it was written over the ages of cherems being written and people signing on to these agreements that we can't listen to these rabbis, and you have to make sure that when you appoint rabbis, no other outside considerations are taken. It's an age-old problem. And work is being done to improve the Rabbanut. From a lot of conversations that we've had with Rav Lau in particular, he's very committed to improving the Rabbanut. There are all types of outside organizations which are putting pressure on the Rabbanut. A lot of them want to destroy the Rabbanut. But because of their work and because of their pressure and because of their influence, they actually bringing about a lot of change. There's a lot of complication, a lot of hardship. But on the other hand, historically, the Rabbanut has been able to withstand, able to stay true to mission. Hopefully, they'll be able to improve in terms of how they deal with individuals and people. And hopefully, we should be zocha to see the fulfillment of the full geula, bigdusha b'tahara, and to see the fulfillment of the nevuah in Yeshaya of tzion b'mishpat tipada b'shaveh b'tzedakah.